Good afternoon. Thank you for choosing Premier Christian Radio. I'm Justin Brawley with something of a cold, but that's not going to stop me bringing you hopefully a great programme this afternoon here on Unbelievable. And thanks to David Aldous for his programme Passages of Life. Back again at the same time next week. Right now, it's time to do Unbelievable. You're unbelievable. And we meet, rather than the guest we were scheduled to have, Tessa Swan. Unfortunately, she couldn't make it for one reason or another. We're going to be meeting Melanie Henry. Very kindly stepped in at short notice to be with us by telephone on the programme today. We'll be meeting her a little later. She has, I suppose you could say, New Age leanings. Finds her own spiritual path through life. Has, you know, found some things helpful in the Bible, and we'll find out all about that. And we're going to be talking to her about Jesus, faith, what she believes. And to help us look at that is Matt Frost of City Gates Church. And a little later on, we'll be meeting Kurt Erickson as well, who's also a pastor in London. So we're talking about faith with Matt and Melanie and Kurt. Do hope you enjoy it. So we'll be coming to all that a little bit later. First of all, though, we were talking about Alpha last week and how to make the most of the Alpha course. It's available now if you'd like to listen back. Could be really useful if you're running an Alpha course or if you just want to hear some great testimonies. It's online now, premier.org.uk/radio, and click on Unbelievable. You can listen back to that programme. It's online. Let's hear what one person had to say about it.
This is Dorothy from Croydon. Hi, Justin. I'm so delighted in the program. You are, we believe it. And especially today, with the Alpha course, I would really encourage all churches that they will have one in their church. It will help so much. May God richly bless and keep you. Bye.
Well, thank you very much, Dorothy, for your comments. And thanks to everyone who did comment on that. Again, premier.org.uk/radio, and that's the way to listen back to that programme on how to get the most out of Alpha. Just time for one more comment here on the voicemail.
Hello, my name's Annette. I'm a regular Premier listener. I really enjoy Unbelievable. I'm wondering if you could have on your programme Ed Hussein. He's a Muslim, and he left a terrorist unit and speaks out against Muslim fundamentalism. I think he'd be a brilliant guest. He's a really intelligent, nice young man. If you could have him on the program, that would be great. I'd like to hear your response to this suggestion. Thanks very much for a great show. Bye.
Well, thank you very much, Annette. And yes, I'd love to get Ed on the program at some point, and I shall look into that for you, Annette. So keep your ears peeled. Right now, we're going to be hearing from the London Institute for Contemporary Christianity. That's before we meet our Christian guest for today, Matt Frost. He's joining me in just a moment.
Connecting with Culture.
Connecting with Culture, written by Peter Heslam. Body and soul. When Anita Roddick founded The Body Shop in 1976, there was nothing remarkable about hippie-like lefties dreaming of a new order. But no one knew that this eco-warrior, in pursuing her dream, would build a multi-million dollar global brand with a dominant high street presence. The distinctives of her business are well known. None of her products has been tested on animals or caused unnecessary environmental damage. She encouraged shop workers to join demonstrations, and she used window displays to publicise campaigns. She was particularly vocal against the purported evils of big business and took a prominent role in the anti-globalisation activism of the pre-9/11 years. What is less well known and overlooked in the newspaper obituaries was her lively spirituality, reflected in the title of her autobiography, Body and Soul. Because business has surpassed the church and politics in power and influence, she argues, it should assume moral leadership in society. It had to shift its emphasis from the material to the spiritual, connecting with people's sense of meaning and purpose. To achieve this, it had to recapture a sense of reverence, an attitude not necessarily dependent on organized religion, which regards life as sacred and awe-inspiring. As an example of this, Roddick turned to the great Quaker industrialists of the past. Their spirituality was, of course, nurtured by their religious commitments and affiliations. But what was of key significance for Roddick is that their spirituality inspired a highly effective combination of business acumen and moral responsibility. Roddick was not always consistent, of course. She called for a boycott of China whilst sourcing Chinese products. She sold her stake in the business to L'Oreal, the cosmetics giant that sanctioned animal testing. And although she claimed to adhere to the Catholic faith of her upbringing, she was generally dismissive of Christianity. But such inconsistencies do not overshadow her greatness. She embodied her brand, principled, outspoken, and daring. Like other great entrepreneurs, she deliberately disrupted conventional business thinking and practice. She was a gadfly, determined to use business to drive social change. "You never get remembered by what you do in business," she once said. "You get remembered for what you do for civil society." Roddick has left the world with a model not only of an enterprising attitude, but of how attitude can be enterprised. She showed how to do business with attitude, in both senses of the phrase, for the sake of a better world.
That was Connecting with Culture, brought to you by the London Institute of Contemporary Christianity. Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Welcome back. And this afternoon, we have a slight change, as I explained earlier. Sitting in for us very kindly this afternoon, in place of a guest who was going to be here, is going to be Melanie Henry. We're going to be meet Melanie shortly, get my words out. And she's going to be telling us about her beliefs. Sort of comes from things from sort of a New Age perspective, but we'll be getting the full story from her shortly. Let's first of all, though, meet Pastor Matt Frost, who has been on this programme a few times now. Thank you very much for coming in, Matt.
Good lovely to be here today.
Good to have you with me again. I quite often call on you, Matt, when we sort of do a sort of dialogue with someone, you know, in the New Age area. But we don't always get a lot of chance to talk about you, so I thought maybe we'd just take a little time this afternoon just to catch up with who Matt Frost is.
Always pleased to talk about myself.
As any pastor is.
Absolutely.
You have, I do remember you've told us before that you didn't grow up with a Christian background, but you came to faith, I think, what, university kind of time? Was that when things
just
happened?
Just before I went to university, so I was about 18. I was brought up as an atheist. My parents are academics. They're both study physics and taught physics in university, and in fact they met on a weekend course on subatomic particles. That's how fascinating my upbringing was. And so they had a very, very sort of rational scientific worldview and were both atheists, and their parents were atheists, and my aunts and uncles were atheists. So quite unusual in this country to have so many people who not just said I'm not sure, but actually said there is no God. And that was my background, and I had very little contact with church or with religion in any sense. Once or twice, dragged along to church when I was in the Scouts and that sort of thing. And but my school wasn't a church school, so it wasn't until I was sort of 17, 18 that I formed some friendship with a couple of Christians at my school when I was in the sixth form there, studying my A levels. And we because of my background. And I wasn't someone who would have said I definitely didn't believe in God, but didn't, you know, but wouldn't have called myself a believer either. I was sort of in the middle, like many people in this country. And these two friends of mine, who were strong Christians, we used to sit and debate, and we became friends, but sit and argue. And I'd say, "How can you believe this stuff?" And then they'd say, try and explain how. We'd go backwards and forwards, and out of that, they challenged me a little bit, because most of my opinions about religion and about Christianity in particular were based on ignorance. I didn't know very much. I was thoroughly ill-informed. I'd never read the Bible, for example, and I'd been through it once when I was about 13. I'd been through it looking for all the rude bits, and it's like people, like kids do with
schoolboy thing.
That's right, you do with the dictionary, and I heard there was a few rude bits in the Bible, so I'd been through trying to find those. But they challenged me, and I began, not in any rush, but bit by bit, to have a look at the Bible, ask a few questions, and go through the process of saying, well, the stuff in here is an interesting story, stuff in the Bible, particularly the story of Jesus, but is it true?
Mm.
And I spent a long time asking that question. And over time, it wasn't in any rush, I came to the point of the conclusion that this is true. I can't find an alternative explanation for the story of Jesus, except that he was who he said he was, the Son of God and so on. And that was the beginning for me of a journey of me turning to God and saying, okay, God, if you are real, then I need you to come into my life. And it was at that point, and I was about 18, I became a Christian.
And did God show up in more than just sort of you being eventually convinced that the Bible was true? I mean, was there an experience of God which followed that?
Not at that, so an instantaneous thing at that moment, or something that I particularly point to as that was the day when something happened, you know, the lights came on, sort of thing. It was a gradual realization that this wasn't just intellectually true, but it was real. I began to start to experience that God was there. Within the church context, and this was an interesting thing, I found that I was amongst a bunch of people who, for the first time in my life, I didn't have to work hard to be with. I didn't have to pretend. I didn't have to put on a show. I didn't have to, you know, wear a mask, if you like, and was able genuinely to be myself with a bunch of people who were very different to me, some of them, but I found the place in which I could thoroughly relax, and that was quite a powerful thing. But I began to experience God, began to have the sense that God was with me. My life was changing, my morals were changing, the way I was living, things I was and wasn't doing, and began to have that sense that God was speaking to me. I began to pray for things, and prayers began to be answered. It was all these things. And not one particular sort of blinding flash of light, but over a period of some months, a genuine experience of, this is real. This is, you know, it's alive. God's alive. It's happening. It's not just an idea that seems satisfying. It's a reality.
And so the story went on from there. And you eventually, you know, found your way into ministry, got a calling there to do that. The church you pastor is City Gates Church in London. Mm-hmm. How did that whole thing start out? Because was that a new church? Were you taking it on from someone that had already established it?
Yes, the church had been going for about 10 years when I took over it. I joined the church when I was a student at college. I came to London for university, studied biology, and here in London, and I'd just become a Christian, and so found my way to a church, and this one was one that seemed suitable, and joined it, and there were quite a lot of students in it, as there still are now, and got involved and was there for a few years. But the church had been planted back in the mid-80s by some people from an organisation called Youth of the Mission, YWAM, and some people from another church group called Ichthus, and they planted this church in central London, meeting in Soho at the time, with a view to reaching out into that area. And I joined the church and stayed on, and over a period of time felt a call into Christian work, and opportunities came, and I won't bore you with the details, but I ended up about 10 or 12 years ago taking over, becoming pastor of our church.
And what sort of you know, people are you reaching in your location in London?
Well, inevitably, as with every church in London, the main people that we're reaching is our friends, our colleagues, our neighbours. That's always the reality. As a church, there's a couple of things that we've sought to do over the years and continue to do now in terms of reaching out beyond that circle of our friends and families and colleagues and so forth. Specifically into the Soho area, we do a certain amount of work both with some of the people involved with the sex industry, the prostitutes and so on, and also quite a lot of people just who are on the streets. The West End is full of people on the streets, thousands and thousands every single day, and we do quite a lot of outreach there. And centred around our centre which is in the West End, and at the same time we've also done quite a lot and continue to do with foreign students here in London. We do outreach to the tens or even hundreds of thousands of people who are here in London specifically to learn English. And many of the people listening would have met them or maybe them themselves here learning English. And we've particularly over the last few years had an outreach to them and have related to lots of them and running English classes and all this kind of stuff.
Wow.
Connect with
fantastic with
Brazilians, Mongolians, Japanese, the whole world is
well, it is a melting pot, London, culturally, and it sounds like you're doing what you can to you know, make sure that you reach out in that situation. And of course you do a bit of outreach as well to those in the sort of new age spectrum.
That's right, yeah.
And that involves, I understand, going to fairs, going to sort of, you know, the kind of markets where New Age people will be, and kind of setting up stall alongside them, really. So explain a bit of your methodology here.
That describes it very well. The work that I've particularly got involved with was started 10, 12 years ago by a lady who was at the time a member of Kensington Temple Church over in Notting Hill. And she had become a Christian from a New Age background and had decided to go along to one of these big New Age festivals, exhibitions that they were having down in near Victoria in central London. And she stood outside giving out Christian leaflets.
Mm.
And she got into conversation with one of the people organising the event, and he challenged her and said, why not come in and get yourself a stall rather than standing out here almost, it seems, as a protest, you know, why not come in and have a stall with, you know, if you're a Christian, come and join in. And she took that as a sort of provocation and did just that and started in a very small way. And over the years, and I and others got involved with her, we developed the thing of at these big New Age festivals or psychic fairs, these kinds of things, of which there's hundreds all over the country. We set up a stall and would, as Christians, and in amongst all the various different New Age psychic remedies, healing stuff that's going on, we'd be there talking to people, praying for people that are sick, giving away vast amounts of Christian literature, gospels, all kinds of things, and just engaging with people in that environment, because large numbers of the people we found that were involved with what we broadly call the New Age were people who did have a belief in God, and many of them actually came from, certainly when they were younger or in the past, or even now still, were involved with church, and also quite a lot of Jewish people as well, who hadn't found within either their church or their Jewish faith the spirituality they were looking for, or thought they were looking for, and decided to try and find it somewhere else with some of the New Age stuff. And so over the years we've been involved, we've seen lots and lots of people make decisions to become Christians, seen many people have been healed, and thousands of sort of extraordinary, you know, conversations and fascinating people that we've met and talked to. And that carries on every, you know, two or three times a year. We find ourselves at different festivals in London or elsewhere.
And when you're on the stall, you know, are you offering prayer? You're offering even, I've heard, you know, sort of prophecy, words of knowledge, things like that. It's quite a very interactive approach, which really goes head on sort of in terms of engaging people with the spirituality.
It is. I must admit, standing on the stand, it's quite intense. You know, you can do it for an hour or two and then you just go and have a break and have a coffee or something, because you're face to face with people, you're talking to people, and yes, at times we've offered what we've sort of loosely called life readings, which is where we'll sit with people and either as God seems to inspire us with prophecies or with stuff from the Bible and actually speak directly into people's lives. And because the stuff we're offering is free, we've often had a queue of people queuing for life readings, because all the other stands who are offering tarot cards and things are sort of £20 a go. So we had queues of people for that. Yeah, lots of prayer for healing. That's been a big thing. And certainly I've been quite involved over the years in praying for the sick. And of all the places I've done it, in church meetings and all sorts of things, have seen more success at a New Age festival than at any other place.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. It's funny. And I think it's partly because the people are very open to almost to whatever, and
that kind of does raise the question, you know, and I'm sure you've had it many times, you know, are you seen as just one more option among the many, or do you kind of try to say when you do give a reading or ask for healing, you know, this is something unique, this isn't just another option in the wide range of New Age options out there.
Certainly clear that we're Christians and that what we're doing, whether it's, you know, the things we're talking about or if we're praying for someone, which we're making it clear that we're Christians and that we're not the healers, that God is, and all these sorts of things. But I'm aware that in the minds of many people out there today, and certainly people at these exhibitions, that Christianity is one option. Although we, or myself as a Christian, and would see it as being unique, and that God is the only God, and so on. Certainly in the minds of many others, it's an option, and so we are in the marketplace in that sense, and need to be there, indicating why we think it's the best option, and why I think it's the best option. There's philosophical reasons for that, there's spiritual reasons for that, there's emotional reasons for that, there's community reasons for that. But certainly the people wandering past, they're like, oh, well, what are you? Oh, you're Christians. And, you know, and we've called our stand various things over the years. The Jesus experience, it's called Fountain of Life for a while, which is something out of one of the Psalms, and all kinds of things. But people turn up and talk. But yes, for them, we are another option, but we're obviously seeking to communicate that we think it's something.
Well, I personally think it's fantastic and very proactive. As you say, why be out there, if you like, on the outside demonstrating when you can be on the inside communicating? This is Matt Frost that I'm talking to, and Matt is joining me throughout this afternoon for the programme. And we're going to be meeting in just a moment our other guest for the duration of the afternoon, Melanie Henry, very kindly stepping in. With New Age leaning, certainly. We'll find out more about that from her. And we're going to be talking to her about faith, what she believes in. And she and Matt will be having an interesting conversation this afternoon. So do hope you can stick with us here on Unbelievable. And we'll give out the details for Matt's church as well, if you're interested. If you're in the London area, think, hey, that sounds like an interesting place to be. We'll give out the website a little bit later on. So stay tuned here on Premier.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the programme. I do hope you're enjoying your Saturday afternoon. And let me tell you, lots to come on Premier this afternoon. If you're not already aware, I'll give some more details later on of what's coming up after this programme. But right now, we're talking with two people. Matt Frost from City Gates Church, who we've already been introduced to. And joining us on the line, Melanie Henry. And I have to say a big thank you to Melanie for being with us today, because our guest who was going to be with us unfortunately had to pull out at short notice. And I called Melanie through a contact of mine, friend of a friend, as it were, and she said, yes, I'll come on. So thanks to Melanie for being with us. And we're going to be finding out all about Melanie as we talk about Christianity and the New Age this afternoon. Melanie has, as it were, leanings towards the New Age. It's a kind of an area which she's been quite interested in for some time. And she's been kind of walking her own spiritual path. She says she's really kind of, grasped some principles which she says works for her. And we're going to be hearing about what works for Matt and what the interactions are between our two guests today. It's going to be fairly free-flowing, kind of a conversation. So I do hope you enjoy it as you listen here on Unbelievable. Let's start off by saying hello to Melanie. Very good afternoon to you, Melanie.
Hello.
Thanks for being with us. And again, thanks for being so kind as to come on at short notice. Melanie, you're actually, we had you on once before, just as a kind of brief contributor, really, to a former programme where we met Beverly Alfred, who was the Reiki healer we had on. You came on sort of to tell us about sort of your views, as far as New Age. But tell us a little bit, maybe take us back to some of your background. Have you ever sort of, have you always believed in God, would you say?
Well, I've always believed in something bigger than me, something out there. A source, a energy, a light, I don't know what, God is what we call it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have, basically.
Sure. Mm. And, did you have any kind of particularly religious upbringing in any way, or not really?
No, not at all. My dad came from a Christian background. My mum, nothing really. But they never continued with it, so I wasn't brought up in any religious, type of thing.
And as far as Christianity goes, did you ever go to church, or was it just something you maybe learnt a bit about at school and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I learnt it at school. I you'd go to church for weddings and funerals and things like that. and it's just stuff you picked up on the way. But I would say that I was very interested in the Christian side of things, especially, you know, Jesus and the New Testament and that kind of stuff.
What was the interest for you in that area?
Well, I think it was, I was at a point in my life where it just wasn't working. You know, when you think to yourself, you know what, there must be more to life than this.
When was this? Was this sort of as an adult?
About 7-8 years ago.
Right.
And, you know, one day I thought, I picked up the Bible and I found myself reading Matthew. And then there was a few things that were kind of jumping out at you, you know. You pick up something and it really strikes you.
Mm.
And then, you know, one of the things was that there's no need to worry about anything. God provides, and, you know, you you look at the birds and you see they don't have to worry about anything. They don't worry about food, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And then I thought, okay, I don't have to worry anymore. And then that was like the beginning of it, really. But, I mean, I found information in all sorts of places after
that,
really.
I mean, would you describe yourself as a Christian or not really?
No, I wouldn't.
But you feel like bits of the Bible have kind of helped you sometimes to see the way ahead.
Yeah.
Mm. And where else would you trace your kind of influences? I mean, I've said you've got New Age leanings. I mean, the New Age is a very big area, though. I mean, would you say that you kind of believe in, I don't know, a lot of the New Age people that I've come across would say they believe, for instance, in, you know, spiritual energy, that we are channels of spiritual energy. Would that be a belief that you hold to?
Yeah.
Mm. And how does that work for you? Do you feel like you in any way interact with that? Do you feel like you have to cleanse your body in any way to get things flowing right?
To look after yourself, definitely. You know, eating right, exercising. I mean, you don't have to do any sort of, you know, I don't know, like physical cleansing in water or anything, but you can, you know, it's just letting go of substances like alcohol, drugs, all that kind of thing.
Mm.
Eating healthy, exercising, looking after yourself. And I think then you can open up to higher levels of understanding.
And, you know, on a day-to-day basis, what would you kind of be doing in a sense to connect yourself with, you know, the divine, with God? Do you pray? Do you meditate?
Yeah, well, praying is meditation. I see them as one and the same. But just sitting quietly, somewhere quietly, and, you know, when your thoughts wander off and, you know, you just start asking questions and asking for guidance and protection and all that sort of thing.
And when you do that, do you kind of have an idea of a God, you know, in the sense that I might think of God, you know, as being up there, if you like, and looking after me, and I'm kind of talking to God in that way?
Mm.
Is that the way you think about it?
Yeah, I see it as a peace within. I don't see myself as separate from God.
Mm.
I think we are all sort of individual expressions of God, you know, we're all one. And I find the peace within, that's my God, that's where I work from, not an outer thing, it's an inner,
sure.
Yeah. Inner thing.
And what about Jesus? Because it was obviously the words of Jesus that you were quoting there earlier, in the gospel that you looked at. I mean, what
in my own way, yeah.
Yeah. But no, it was you know, quite accurate actually.
Yeah.
but what for you is Jesus about, you know, what do you get from Jesus?
Someone who, you know, he was quote normal, he was just an ordinary person, you know, he had a connection with God and God revealed things through him, and then he was to pass it on, you know.
Mm.
So that others can have a better understanding of life, how to treat each other, how to live in peace and harmony, you know, all that kind of thing. And at that time, he came with a new idea, you know, and it was hard for people to change their beliefs or understand, you know, but those that did, they saw that this new way worked.
Yeah.
And the ones that couldn't let go of their beliefs, you know, well, they killed him because of his beliefs. But he didn't do anything wrong or, you know, to justify being killed, you know?
Yeah.
He just brought a new way of doing things. It wasn't working before, you know?
Well, absolutely. Let's bring Matt into the conversation now. Matt Frost from City Gates Church. Matt, first time you've heard from Melanie or interacted, but do you want to sort of bring anything into the conversation at this point?
I thought it was really interesting what you said, Melanie, about getting to that point where you felt, you know, what was your phrase, sort of...
There must be more to life
than this, you know. Almost, I've had enough of it as it is. Something must be different. And one of the things that you talked about was the idea of worry or anxiety. Was that something that was going on with you? Know you were worrying about certain things.
Yeah,
would you say
worry about everything? Like I was, you know, and then that would just bring on stress and, you know, stomach problems, all sorts of things. You know, worrying about your bills, worrying about going to work, yeah, worrying about the children. You know, it was just like a complete worry. You just lived in it, you know.
Because I think certainly, I mean, for so many of us, that experience of worrying or anxiety is just, it's every day, isn't it? It's like, it's not just, you know, occasionally, but people just live out of that all the time. And many people listening to the show may well be feeling that. I found it very interesting that the... you read the words of Jesus, and the ones you mentioned in the book of Matthew in the Bible about don't be anxious about tomorrow, don't worry about what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat, and so on. Which I, like you, read, and I'm thinking that's fantastic stuff. What was it about what you read there that made you think, no, I don't need to worry? Was there something that gave you confidence that you didn't need to be concerned about your bills and your kids or whatever it was?
Yeah, well, because you have life, basically, and you start to be grateful for everything that you do have, right, in the here and the now,
mm-hmm,
rather than worrying about all this stuff that hasn't happened, you know, and the fact that, you know, you are protected and guided by God,
mm-hmm,
and he wouldn't leave you desperate or, you know, just everything is there for you, you know, it's provided for, but you just have to trust that, you know. Which is another hard thing, is trusting
absolutely
that,
yeah,
there is this God out there that loves you and doesn't want any harm to come to you.
Mm. Now, you used a phrase there which I thought was really interesting, that there is this God out there who looks after us, who loves us, and I, as I read that bit you mentioned in the Bible there, that whole sense is that Jesus says, don't worry, because your Father in heaven knows you need these,
yeah,
things. You need food, you need clothes, and so on. But earlier on, when you were sort of explaining where you're coming from, you talked about the fact that God wasn't so much out there. You talked about God being within, inside.
Well, he's everywhere.
Okay.
He's everywhere because he's within you.
Yeah.
But then it's out there in the world as well, you know. So it's like, you know, you're just an extent, you know, you're just a part of this whole God thing that's out there.
Uh-huh.
And you're expressing your part of God in your own little area. Kind of thing, but he's still in you, so it's inside of you, outside of you, everywhere.
Okay, I'm with you. Now, you mentioned earlier on, I just wanted to draw that out, that in looking at the story of Jesus, you saw Jesus as being a man with a message, if you like. Was that the way you'd see it? And you know, just another human being, but someone with something, you know, really helpful to say. Would that describe well how you see Jesus?
Yeah, but he also said that we can all do the things he did and more.
Mm-hmm.
So that suggests to me that we, you know, we can all do what he did.
Okay.
Which makes him not much different from us.
So what do you do with the things that we have where he talks, recorded in, let's say, in the book of Matthew, which you've obviously read? How do you view the stuff in there where he says things, where he puts himself in a completely different category to you and me and other people?
Well, he was at the time, wasn't he? Because he came with a new, you know, something new. But, you know, as he said, you can do this and you can do what I can do and more.
What kind of things are you thinking of there, Matt? Because it sounds like you've got an idea in your head of things that Jesus said about himself,
hmm,
that suggest he wasn't just an ordinary man.
Well, he claims quite a lot of things for himself, as I've read through the New Testament, that are, in my mind, significantly beyond anything that I could certainly say about myself. So he claims to be the one who created the world. and have been there when the world was created. He talked about the fact that he's the one who is going to judge the world at the end. He talks about the fact that we need to choose to follow him, and if you come to him, you have life, and if you don't, you don't. And that's something I certainly couldn't say about myself. He describes himself as the one who is able to forgive sins, and I can't forgive somebody else's sins, and that's the only person who can do that is God. He's claiming to be God come as a human being. He talks about the fact that in his dying and him coming back from the dead, he was going to do something that would mean he was the saviour of the world. He was going to say he save the world. The things he's saying are, they're absolutely bonkers if they're not true. They're really in the level of sort of crazy talk to talk in these terms. And particularly in the culture that he was in, the Jewish culture was one of the reasons that he was killed, which Melanie referred to earlier on. So I wonder if it's possible to read all of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, and to come up the conclusion that he's just a man, that there's, you can pick little bits out, that, you know, he could be just another good teacher. But if you take the whole, the stuff he's saying is, as I say, if it's not true, he's, you know, it's really, really quite mad.
I mean, what do you make of that, Melanie? Is there room in your thinking that Jesus was more than just a good teacher? He undoubtedly was a great teacher. He's given us some of the best teaching that the world has known.
Yeah, definitely. In that sense, he was a great person, but he was human. You know, he came in a body, you know, like we all are. But, you know, he was a spirit and he was a soul as well. And where he says, you know, he was there at the beginning when the world was created, we are all here now and we can go on to create another world that we could all live in peace and harmony. You know, that's another world I want to be a part of creating. And in my own way, I know I can do that, you know, and forgiving people of their sins, I can forgive people, you know, if they've hurt me, I can forgive them. So it's all sort of...
Can you forgive them if they've hurt someone else? Let's say as I'm in the studio here with Justin, I now punch him in the face.
Ow!
Can you forgive me for that?
Yes, I would. And I'd like to understand, I'd like to know what made you do that. You know, what made you so angry that you had to take that out on him? And then we get talking and then we'd find out exactly why.
But are you, you can understand and try and help me, and I probably would need help if I started punching Justine. He's a very nice man. But surely in that sense, the only person who has the right to forgive me is Justin, if he chooses to. I don't know if you would, but...
well, I'd have to think about it.
Depends how hard I hit you, I suppose. But you can might be able to help me, and as I said, I probably need it, but you can't forgive me. And so when Jesus wandered around on a number of occasions recorded in the Gospels saying to people that their sins were forgiven, and there's one particular story where he healed someone who was crippled, lying on a bed. But before he healed them, he said, "Your sins are forgiven." And everyone around thought, who can forgive sins except for God? Because the only person who can forgive us when something's been done wrong to us is the person we've hurt. You know, or if we've been hurt, the only person who can forgive. But God is the other person who can come in and forgive. So when Jesus wanders around saying, "I can forgive sins," what he's claiming to be is God. Because none of us have the right to forgive the sins for someone, you know, when they've hurt someone other than us. So that's one of the number of reasons why when I read through some of the stuff in the Gospels, I think this guy's saying something more than just I'm a man with a message. There's been lots of men or women with messages throughout history, some of them good messages. But the stuff he's saying is, I would suggest, I'd be interested to hear what you think, Melanie, goes so far beyond just being a philosopher, a wise man, or a teacher. What do you think about that?
If he's claiming that he is God or part of God, you know, then aren't we all? You know, I know this is like hard, you know, where this is another thing that might be hard to believe, but aren't we all like mini gods on this earth, here to look after it and to act in godlike ways and just be peaceful, which is what God is, you know, and be loving and unconditional loving and all those qualities, all those God-like qualities. Can't we just get there and be that as well, you know?
I think you've hit on something that's really quite quite important and quite sort of a crux point in terms of the conversation, certainly that I have with people who come from a sort of New Age understanding. It's because some of the things that you've said there are exactly some of the things that I would say, that that we are put upon this world, this earth, to, how did you put it, to behave in a godlike way. And I would say that that's true, that we're called to love, we're called to understand, we're called to give out justice and so on. And so I would agree with that. Now, the bigger question is that are we therefore gods ourselves or not? And I would from what we've said, we probably, you and I, in slightly different, have a different understanding of that. That you're using the language, if I'm right, of saying that that we're all gods or parts of God, if you like, whereas I would say that we're all made by God, and the Bible's language is that we're made in God's image. So we do have some God-like characteristics. I think that by that it means we have the ability to choose, the ability to love, the ability to think and communicate, which are the things that God can do, although better than us. And but the God has made us in His image, and so we're God's creation, but we're not God ourselves. And that would be that's probably something where we're in a slightly different place, would you say, Melanie?
No, it's like, okay, it's like God is this bigger version of us. Do you see what I'm saying? He's he or she or it, whatever, is the creator.
Yep.
Who's made the birds, the tree. There's no way I can go out and make a bird.
Okay.
Or make a tree.
We could have a go, couldn't we? See what happens, yeah.
Those things are left to the greater, grandest version of ourselves.
Okay, yeah.
You know, but we are like these little mini versions that are put here. Or we come here, as I said before, to do good and to make people feel good and try and change.
I mean, if I could wade in a little bit with my thoughts, I mean, as you're speaking here, I mean, the thing that would make me feel the biggest difference between me and God is that I have freedom and I all too often choose to do the wrong thing, whereas God never chooses to do the wrong thing. That's the way I think about God, you know. And so, you know, in a sense, all of us, you know, the problem with the world, isn't it, is that we're all making wrong choices so often. And I don't kind of, in a sense, trust myself to be God, because I don't feel like I have it within me to do the right thing. You see the mess people make of the world, and you have to, that's why I think we need God, because if we're trying to do it on our own steam, you know, we do a bad enough job as it is.
Right, and I agree with that, but, you know, then it's like, because at the moment there's so much trouble in the world, there's so much killing and, you know, unnecessary stuff going on, and it's like changing our behaviour let's just stop all this and do something different, let's do something godlike. And it's not a God about fear and anger and, you know, all this stuff, it's a God about peace and love and just harmony. So if we just all stopped for a moment and thought, you know what, let's change, let's do something different.
I guess
this isn't working, you know, and it's qualities, those godlike qualities.
I mean, I guess what I'm getting at, I suppose, is that ultimately, though, I don't feel like I've got those without God giving them to me,
right,
you know.
Exactly, because you have to know what they are before you can, you know, take them on. And that's getting to know God, isn't it? And getting to know what...
But how do you get to know God? Because, I mean, that's what it comes down to. If I want to be like God, how do I get to know God? And, well, I have to confess, you know, for me, that's about doing it through Jesus, knowing... Because Jesus tells me about what God is like. And so if I can look at Jesus, if I can follow Jesus, then I can hope to maybe...
Yeah,
but Matt, I mean, what's your take on this as well?
I think you've hit on the good point there, Justin, that idea that if we're to live differently, if we acknowledge that the way we're living individually and sort of, you know, as the human race
in many ways not good. Not that there aren't some good bits, but there's a lot of bad stuff, both in my life and the life of everyone in the world. We need God to come and change us, to change our hearts, our minds, so that we live differently. So the question is, as you've asked, how do we connect with God? And if I'm bad, or at least partially bad, and God's good, how do I, as a get in touch with that good God and allow some of what He's up to, what God's up to come and change me? And as you've mentioned, Justin, as a Christian, the understanding is that it's because Jesus came, and because in Him dying and in Him coming back from the dead, that event was the thing that dealt with, made it possible to deal with the problem of the fact that in our hearts we have stuff that's wrong, selfishness or sin, to use the Bible's word. And it's in that event and us responding to that we can come back to God and we can start to live differently. Now, Menley, how would you see us as having to? How do we get in touch with God? How do we, and allow that change to start happening? Because we're both agreeing that things aren't the way they should be, and they need to change. How would you see that?
I think you just ask a very simple question, like you ask out loud. Mm-hmm. What do I have to do? Please show me the way. Mm-hmm. Show me what I have to do. And acknowledge that. I will do as you will not tell you, I will do, just show me the way, please just show me. Because I did that, I was in a really bad place, and I just, at night I'd be crying and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, I give up. There's nothing I'm physically doing that's working, so please show me something, please show me. I just kept on and on, and then it was like, then little things would change, and then I'd see, and then...
Did you get sort of answers to the questions?
Yeah, and it's just opened up a whole new way of life, way of thinking, way of seeing things, way of doing things, and it's magical, really, and it's enjoyable, and it's lovely, and it's not stressful, and it's not... I mean, you still have your everyday things of bills to pay, and, but you're not worrying about all that stuff.
We're going to have to take... Just a quick break here, guys, as we've come to the end of our first section. So if you're listening and you're really intrigued by what you're hearing, you can always get in touch with me and leave me a voicemail message. Do enjoy getting your voicemail messages. Perhaps you've got some advice for either of our guests today, Melanie and Matt. You've got a perspective you'd like to share. Here's the number, 08456 525252, and select option 5, leave me a voicemail message that way, or feel free to email, that's unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Going to get straight back to the chatting in just a moment, a quick break, and in the next section we're also going to be joined by Kurt Erickson, who's a pastor in East London.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
And we're continuing to talk to Melanie Henry, who very kindly has stepped in place of our New Age guest, Tessa. But Melanie has been telling us about her sort of story, how she has come to believe in, to really get something out of the spiritual side of life, since sort of coming to a point where she needed to say, is there more to life than this? And she's been talking to Matt about, Jesus and the Bible and how she sees Jesus and the person of Jesus. And Jesus, of course, is central to Christianity. Obviously not so central to the way that Melanie sees the world, but certainly has been useful in terms of being able to get bits and pieces from what he's said over the years. We're also going to be meeting in this section of the programme Kurt Erickson, who pastors a church in East London as well, and getting his views on it as well, and seeing what he has to put into the mix. That's our programme today, as we talk to Melanie and Matt. Well, let's carry on our conversation then. Matt, I think we sort of broke off on the last section with Melanie talking to us about... Just the way that she sees, Jesus and God and that sort of thing. I mean, for you, what is the key component to you? You know, we were talking about how do we connect with God. Why for you is Jesus so important in that connection as far as you're concerned?
It's because as the Bible communicates and Jesus communicates, and as I would understand it, that the big problem with the human race, the big problem with you and me and everyone, is the problem that the Bible calls sin. Now, it's an idea that it's not necessarily very palatable, but the idea that every one of our hearts, every one of our minds is in some way corrupt. And the Bible goes so far as to say, there's a phrase in the book of Jeremiah, that the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, which sounds a really dramatic statement. And the idea that every single one of us has wired into us somewhere selfishness and pride. And that's why the world is the way it is. That's why we as individuals suffer and why the world suffers as a result. And that problem of selfishness is so sort of deeply rooted that if we're going to change, if we're going to live differently, if we're going to live by the sort of the love and the justice and the freedom that we've already talked about in this discussion and that most of us would say that we want, then something has to be done about that problem, the fact that our hearts are corrupted. There is, again, to use the Bible's word, sin in every one of us. And certainly for me, one of the things when I became a Christian was finally dawning on me that this is the way that I was, that I did have this in me. I always thought, I'm a really nice guy, I'm a nice bloke. And in becoming a Christian, it sort of dawned on me, actually, there's an awful lot inside me that was not good. I mean, it wasn't all, there was some good bits, but most of it, there was a lot of selfishness, there was a lot of pride and arrogance and all sorts of other things. And Jesus comes and speaks about this again and again and again and says that this problem needs to be somehow solved. And he talks about the fact that the only way that it can be solved is because he was willing to die as a sacrifice to deal with that problem, to take those, that selfishness, that sin, and to destroy it, to destroy the power of it, and to give us the possibility of living a new life by rather than coming out of that sort of corruption, that sin, but live it differently. And it'd be interesting to hear what Melanie has to say on this, because certainly as I've chatted with people from sort of a New Age perspective before, that idea that we are, all of us, we have this corruption within us, is an idea that many people would find quite difficult. They'd say, well, no, we're all basically good, we do a few things wrong, and we could do better. But that this idea that we all have this sort of selfishness wired into us and that needs radical surgery for dealing with is something that many people would feel uncomfortable with. But that's the reason why I keep going on about Jesus and coming back to Jesus, because he's the only one, as far as I can understand it, who can deal with this, who can provide this radical surgery.
What do you think of that then, Melanie? Do you feel like, you know, as Matt's been saying, we're all at heart, you know, we've got wrong motives, we've got wrong things going on inside us, and that we need something to take that for us, that we can't do it ourselves?
I would say at heart, like, we are all good and we are all love. That is the basic essence of human beings, is love. But it does get corrupted along the way. And it's not, I don't feel that we're born with all that sin. And, you know, and to tell people, you know, that you're born with this sin and you're corrupt and you have, is quite frightening. But I think along the way, we're brought up by people who don't have an understanding of certain things, and then you're given this view of the world, and then, you know, it's just all this other stuff just gets pushed on top of you, and as you grow up through it, you have all these confusing and conflicting ideas about yourself.
So we kind of get polluted along the way.
I feel so. And then what you have to do, you can turn to God, Jesus, or whoever to help you to overcome all those things that you've been told about yourself, which are not true, you know. It's like, and then when you find out your true essence of who you are, you realize you're quite a wonderful being and that you can go on to do good in this world, you know. It's like, I don't know, there's, you're just born into so many different situations, you know. Some kids are born into abusive families and they're given a distorted view of love, so then they go on to repeat that, you know. It's like, it's like whatever you're told as from a baby, you're going to believe it, aren't you? Because you think, well, that's what mum and dad did, or that's what they say. And then it's only when you kind of get older, you're like, hang on a minute, that's not right. And then you want to go and find your own you know, you want to find the truth
but
about things.
For you, Melanie, and getting personal here, you know, how has that worked for you, you know, finding the way through, you know, getting rid of the lies, getting rid of the things that have tainted you?
Well, it's life's experiences that come your way, and then you realise and how you handle them. And things, you know, as I said, I went on this journey which took me to a different country, and before I knew it, I was doing things I thought I'd never be doing before, you know, that didn't even come into my, you know, way of thinking. You know, I went and lived in Jamaica for 4 years. I ended up working with an organisation who helped people with HIV and AIDS. It was just amazing. And then it just sort of humbled me a lot. It humbled me, brought me down a little bit, you know. Matt said he had arrogance, you know, and pride, and we all have that. But then when you see other people going through stuff, you know, I remember one of the first things I said to myself was, I will never, ever complain again, you know. And I never have, because I have nothing to complain about.
So you feel, in a sense, that opening yourself up to life, to other experiences, yeah, has helped you to become, yeah, a better person in that way. I'd love to bring in at this point Kurt Erickson joins us now, pastor of Elios Christian Centre in East London. And Kurt, you've been listening to what Melanie has to say. Any reflections for us to get us going?
Well, yes. I mean, well, Melanie has said some very good points, and she's spoken a lot on certain things. But let me just mention a few things. Melanie, you mentioned about, you know, behavior, the way that we are brought up determines our behavior and our outlook. And I think that is true in many ways. But also, I'd like just to ask you, though, I mean, just to think about, what about those who have been brought up in very good homes, who have been taught to love, and who've been taught to, you know, just to respect everybody, and we have, but then have also gone off the rails and been able to do evil as well. I mean, people who have rejected all that and have gone, just people who have been rebellious and gone, and just gone the wrong way. And we've seen time and time again that even though those who are brought up in horrible homes sometimes have a tendency to, you know, do more horrible things, but there are cases, and it's quite a few cases, that those have not, that has not been the scenario, that still deep down inside everyone, there's a sense, as Matt was saying before, maybe not in these words, but there is a separation from God at birth. This can be proved, I think, as well, too. I mean, do you have to teach a child to do good or to do bad? If a child is left by himself, like say he's 3 years old, and the parent tells him, do not touch the cookies or the biscuits or something, and the child says, okay, the parent leaves, and the child makes a beeline to the biscuits and eats it, and the parent comes in and sees the biscuits gone, and he says, who did that? And the child puts the biscuits behind the back and says, I don't know. And when a child is 3 years old, it's kind of cute, but when he's 13 and a child still does that, the child is a delinquent. And when a child is 23 years old and still does that, he is probably behind bars. But my question is, who taught that child to steal? Who taught that child to lie to his parents? It is the heart from birth needs that regeneration. There is a separation. And bad people can do good, but there's still that separation that we have just by birth. Jesus talked about being born again. And the sense that we are born of the flesh, we're born in his image, we can show compassion, we can do good, we have an intellect. These are all qualities of God that God has given every single person. Jesus then talked about you must be born again, born of the Spirit, because there's more to life than just showing compassion on this earth. There's more to life than just doing good on this earth. There's more to life than just flesh and blood and traveling and meeting new people and having experiences that shape our lives. There's something beyond that that Christ can reveal. Jesus told his disciples, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, meaning if you've seen me, you've seen God. At one time, and I believe Christianity is the only religion that really purports this, that it's when God actually came down. Most religions, you have to go up to God. He's trying to do all these good things to please him. Christianity says that, no, God came down, because it's impossible for us to even understand God without God giving us that revelation. So we can see aspects of God. We can see love. We can see light. We can, you know, as far as, you know, a dimmings of light, as it were. But to really understand true light, as Christ is the light, the true love, that God is love, only takes a revelation and that revelation comes from Christ.
Well, let's allow, yeah, Melanie, what, Kurt had a lot to say there, but what's your take on all that?
Well, I agreed with every word he said. I agreed with every single word he said, because I can equate that, exactly everything he said, I can equate that to my experience. Although my experience didn't take me through church, it didn't take me through a set religion, you know. I feel that when I left, when I made that, when I asked that question, you know, there must be more to life than this, I was then taken on this journey, you know. And then when I was in Jamaica, that's when I feel that I went on a spiritual journey within, you know, and all these things, amazing things happened to me. I was shown things that, you know, that I know there was no university or no church could show me, you know, about myself. And then when that journey came to an end, that part of it, I found myself slap bang in the middle of exactly where I left.
Mm.
And then it's like I was born again, because I came back with nothing. I had to start again. I had to put my kids back in school. I had to find somewhere to live. But I'd been given a whole new set of basic principles to work off of, you know, and I've kept that, and I've gone on, and I've gone on, and things have got better and better, and life is just fantastic.
I'll allow you to come back to that in just a moment, Kurt. Maybe think about what way Melanie's interpreted that idea of being born again for herself.
Sure, sure.
But Matt, did you want to sort of say anything on the back of what Kurt and Melanie have been saying there?
Very interesting, Melanie, the idea that coming to a point in your life of saying there must be more to life than this, and then sensing a journey, and describing yourself at the end of it as being, well, a new beginning, if you like, that things had started afresh. And would you say that I've referred to it, and Kurt's talked about it as well, this idea that there remains within sort of the human heart something that is corrupted, that needs to be sorted out, needs to be dealt
yeah.
with, and so on,
yeah.
and certainly for myself as a Christian, that I can make some sort of progress myself, but that the thing that's really going to deal with that corruption, really going to solve it, to heal it, to cut it out, whatever it is me coming to Jesus Christ and allowing him through what he did when he died and rose again from the dead, through that event, allowing my heart to be changed, to be literally started anew, born again, is the phrase. Now, would you say, from your point of view, that you know, what has God done, or what has happened to you about that aspect of your of who you are, your heart, that corrupt part, if you like? What's happened to that as you've been on this journey these last few years?
Well, it's just fallen away, and when you say corrupt, it's just such a strong word, because
I mean, you're right. It's a very strong word, and it's one that people, you know, a lot of people would feel uncomfortable, but certainly
I wouldn't say it was corrupt. It was just I was. You know, I didn't understand, you know, you just didn't know. You thought, you know, you think you know everything about life, or, you know, but you don't. There's more, and you just want to go on that journey. It's like a longing, because once you start on it, you don't want to stop.
Yeah.
You just want to keep going and keep going, and even now I'm at this point, I'm still learning, I'm still finding.
Well, it sounds like the journey's going on for you. It continues.
And it seems to me that the more I keep going, the closer I get. It's like the closer you get to God, if you know what I mean, until you are at one with him again.
Let me just give out the number for people who maybe are listening and want to get in touch and respond and give some advice for themselves. Once again, it's 08456 52 52 52. Select option 5 if you want to respond to anything that Melanie's saying on the programme this afternoon, or either our other guests, Kurt and Matt. And again, that's 08456 52 52 52. Select option 5 or email unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Let's hear again from Kurt then. Kurt, what would be your response to Melanie? Melanie, I think if I could kind of sum up maybe the two views that we're getting here. On the one hand, we've had Matt and yourself saying The problem with the heart is one that needs radical surgery, as Matt's put it. You know, it needs Jesus to come in, replace it, give us a new heart, basically. And that happened when he died and rose again. Melanie's saying, well, in my experience, it was kind of a process where, you know, by better understanding, I kind of cleared myself up in that way. What's your response to that, Kurt?
Well, I mean, as far as the, you know, Melanie, you seem to be in a place now where your head is a lot clearer than it was before, and you're on this journey trying to find God. As a matter of fact, you even said that you just keep on going, keep searching for God, he, she, or it, whoever it may be. I don't get from what you're saying, though, Melanie, that you actually found exactly what you're looking for, even though you may feel good and you may feel better. And as you've quoted what you use, a phrase that we've used from the Bible, you've been born again. I still feel that you're still searching for something, that you're still not quite sure who he, she, or it is, and you don't really have a grasp of what, who.
Oh, life and love, and I feel that I am an expression, an individual expression of that. And I use that, you know, in everything I do.
Melanie, what happens when the feeling is not there?
It's always there.
Well, what happens when it diminishes, or put it this way, if it does diminish, what happens?
Then I get back to it. You center yourself, and you can get back. Like sometimes you get knocked off because people can always come and say angry things, and then you start saying, you know, you start questioning, but then you just stop, and then you get back on track. It's like it's always there. It never leaves you once you've connected with it.
And
then it just pushes you on to all these different experiences where I can then share my life with others. You know, I can help other people. I can, you know, be there if people need me. Like today, they called in. Would you do it? Yeah, of course, no problem. You know, it's like you just go along in life being an example, which Jesus was. He was an example. So hopefully people can look at me and think, hey, I want what she's got. And then they'll come and ask, and I'll just sit and talk and, you know, try and show them a bit of what I'm living.
Jesus was, you're absolutely right, Jesus was an example. But also, to use him as an example, you have to also use exactly not only how he lived, but also what he taught. Mm. And if Jesus taught, and emphatically, the Bible truly states this emphatically, that he taught that he was God. As a matter of fact, that was one of the main reasons why they crucified him, the charge of blasphemy, that he claimed to be God. If God, to you, is just having a feel-good factor, being in the zone, being able to do stuff, and then I'm just, you know, really flowing with it, but then you're saying Jesus is the example. Jesus just wasn't in the zone. Jesus submitted everything to God himself. As a matter of fact, he even said he was God, and he's a son of God. And so to even use Jesus as an example would be wrong for you, because he's saying the exact opposite you're saying.
No, he was saying the same thing. He's saying, you know, he was connected to God, which is what I'm saying. I never said that he was a loser, or he didn't say that. What I'm trying to say is that his example of life, you know, we can follow, and which I have followed and tried to, you know, I have followed by being peaceful and loving and showing people, you know, you can get back to God and all this kind of stuff.
I guess maybe if I could just wade in just briefly here. I mean, I don't think Matt or Kurt would disagree that Jesus shows us the example, but they seem to be saying more, he is the answer. He doesn't just give us answers. He himself is the answer. It's more than just him being a teacher. He is the solution as well, because it's through Jesus, through what he's done, that we actually get to that place where we can say of ourselves, I can follow God because of what Jesus has done. I mean,
yeah, I'm not denying that. That's true. Just one example. There's many people in this world that have come and changed things and made a difference. You know, if you get me,
I understand what you're saying. Maybe we've only got a couple of more minutes, gentlemen. So I know we'd all like to kind of maybe wrap up our thoughts. Kurt, I'll give you the chance just to maybe wrap up what you're thinking before we say goodbye to our other guests.
Yes, Melanie, we were just saying that. I mean, the point I should make before is that, you know, to have this feeling of love and feeling good and doing good works is fine, but I would say that you cannot use Christ as your example of what you're doing, because he did not do it just to do good works. Jesus says no one comes to God or is as you would say, to it or to he, she, whatever, no one comes to that place unless it's through him. And now you may believe that or not believe it, but if you don't believe that, then you can't use Christ as your example of the way that you live now and the way that you found where you're at right now.
But why not?
Because he taught the only way to get to where you're at or where you're saying you're at and to find it is through him.
When I made that decision to, you know, I asked that question, there's more to life than this. The first place I turned to was in Matthew, and I got a few teachings and a few revelations from there. And then I went on to a journey. So in my own way, I did go through Jesus to get to where I am now. He showed me the way.
What did he tell you? How did he show you the way without telling you that it's only through him? Because this contradicts the whole New Testament.
Maybe it needs to be contradicted. Because I turned to Matthew, and there was lines in there which I underlined, the lines that stood out to me about don't worry, you know, you're in God's hands, there's nothing for you to worry about, blah, you know, many things. Then I moved on.
Who was he talking about in Matthew? What is the context of who he was talking to, Melanie? Was it just anybody on the street, or was it those who believed in him?
I think Jesus could talk to anybody. He wasn't exclusive in his teachings.
Many times he's very exclusive in who he's talking to.
Who's talking to him, or who Jesus is talking to? Because Jesus got his revelations from God, and then he gave out those teachings to everybody. It didn't matter who they were. So he wasn't exclusive. He got his revelations from one source and then gave it to many.
We're going to have to make this the final comment from you, Kurt.
Okay, I'll just say, Melanie, but I'd say that to find a real source of authority on where you base your thoughts on, the Bible is a very good source to find your authority and your base, but you have to read it carefully. And sometimes Jesus spoke to the general audience, sometimes he spoke to his disciples. To say, don't worry to somebody, you're with God, would give somebody false hope if they're not with God. I could go to somebody who just hates God and say, hey, don't worry about it, you're going to be with God. That's a lie. But those who believe in him and those who trust him and see him, not only as the only way to God, then there's a perfect peace. It goes beyond feeling, it goes beyond circumstances, it goes beyond traveling, it goes beyond even good works. But there's a subtle assurance that God is with me because Christ lives within me. And by his Spirit he can.
Kurt, thank you very much for your contributions today. It's interesting. It's quite stirred things up here, and it's good to have that. Thank you very much. That's Kurt Erickson. Melanie, last couple of thoughts from you before we say goodbye to Matt as well.
I just think that everybody is an individual and we all have the right to believe whatever we want to believe. And as long as it gets you to a place where we're all supposed to be, and that is ultimately with God or the energy or the source, then as long as you get there, it doesn't really matter.
Okay. Melanie, thank you so much for being with us today.
That's fine.
Thank you for stepping in at short notice.
All right, it was fun.
You've been a wonderful guest and really appreciate it. And I hope, certainly, you know, your thoughts have made me think, and I hope our thoughts have made you think as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant. Matt, thanks for being with us today.
Pleasure to be here again. Thank you, Melanie, as well.
Any final words for Melanie on her journey?
I think that we've really hit in this moment. It's on the big thing is we've talked about Jesus a lot. He's come up again and again and again. And the big question we're wrestling with is who is this guy? And for me as a Christian, he is the example, but he is the answer. He is God embodied himself, and he is unique in that. He is substantially different from anybody else as a result of that. And, you know, Mel has expressed a rather different approach to Jesus, seeing him as an example, but perhaps just as a messenger from God, and that's, I think, is sort of the crux of our conversation today, and I think a really key point that we've touched on.
All right, thank you very much both for being with me, and thank you for listening. You've been hearing from Melanie Henry and from Matt Frost on the programme today, and contributions towards the end there also from Kurt Erickson. Matt, I did promise to give out details for your church website. If people want to find out more about City Gates Church, where should they go?
www.citygateschurch.net.
citygatechurch.net. You're unbelievable. Do join me again at the same time next week. We'll have more Christian, non-Christian discussion for you at the same time between 2 and 3.30. We've got Father John Twistleton here next with Firmly I Believe. And do stay tuned for the rest of the afternoon premiere playback along soon. And of course, Dave and B with Hip Rock UK. Have a blessed rest of the weekend. I'm Justin Brierley. See you again at the same time next week.